You want to turn in your Bibles to Exodus 14. On the night of the Passover, death struck every home in Egypt. Only the Israelites were protected from the death of their eldest ones, and they were protected by the blood of the lamb placed around the door jamb. And the Egyptians that night pled with the Egyptians to leave their land. So Israel gathered together, and they left the land of captivity to journey to the land of promise. And God used 10 horrible plagues to show that He alone is God. He used these plagues to deliver His people from their bondage. And then God visibly led the Israelites out of Egypt. As they journeyed, God went in front of the nation in a huge pillar of cloud. And at night, God continued to go before them in a massive pillar of fire, so that God Himself was their guide as they went along the journey from Egypt. And as they left, God did not lead them the quick way along the shores of the Mediterranean. Instead, God led them into the wilderness between the forks of the Red Sea, the two gulfs there. And they continued onward, and then they suddenly reversed their course to camp on the western shores of the Gulf of Aqaba. Back in Egypt, Pharaoh had another change of heart. He's done this multiple times. And he decided that he really did not want to lose over 1 million slaves. So he gathered together the army of Israel, of Egypt, and chased after Israel. He believed they were lost in the wilderness and that he would be able to trap them, defeat them, and bring them back into bondage. And so he pursued Israel and trapped them somewhere along the shores of the Red Sea. And the Israelites, of course, they saw Pharaoh and his army approaching, and they accused Moses. We see this in verse 11. They said unto Moses, "Because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, Let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness." Moses responded and assured them that they would not die, but that they would instead see the salvation of the Lord, that they did not need to fear. And God spoke to Moses then, and he commanded him to speak unto the children of Israel that they go forward. "But lift thou up thy rod and stretch out thine hand over the sea and divide it." What a command. Go divide the sea. And Moses goes out and he does that. He raises his hand over the sea, and God promises the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. That presence of God, which had led the Israelites to that specific spot, now moved from in front of the nation to place itself between the Israelites and the Egyptians. So to the Egyptians, it was a great cloud of darkness, but to the Israelites, it was a great light. And it kept the Israelites and the Egyptians apart. It kept the Egyptians from attacking. And Moses went out and did just as God had said. He stretched his rod over the sea. And God sent forth a strong east wind. And the Red Sea was divided. By morning, the ground was dry. And the Israelites then began to walk into the middle of that wall of water. They crossed safely to the other side of the Red Sea. Pharaoh saw what had happened and decided he was going to pursue them, even into the Red Sea. That morning, as Pharaoh's army began to cross, God sent great trouble on them. He caused the wheels to fall off their chariots. The men were terrified, attempted to flee back to the safety of the shores. But God instructed Moses to raise his hand again over the sea. And the waters rushed back into their natural position, overwhelmed the Egyptians, and destroyed them all. In Exodus 14, verse 30, it says, Thus the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the shore. And Israel saw that great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians. And the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. And then sang Moses and the children of Israel this song unto the Lord. I will sing unto the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and song, and he has become my salvation. He was my God, and I will prepare him an habitation. He is my father's God, and I will exalt him. The Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name. Pharaoh's chariots and his host as he cast into the sea. His chosen captains are also drowned in the Red Sea. The depths have covered them. They sank into the bottom as a stone. Thy right hand, O Lord, has become glorious in power. Thy right hand, O Lord, hath dashed in pieces the enemy. And in the greatness of thine excellency, thou hast overthrown them that rose up against thee. Thou sendest forth thy wrath, which consumed them as stubble. And with the blast of thy nostrils, the water were gathered together. The flood stood upright as in heap, and the depths were congealed in the heart of the sea. The enemy said, I will pursue, I will overtake, I will divide the spoil. My lust shall be satisfied upon them. I will draw my sword, my hand shall destroy them. Thou didst blow with thy wind, the sea covered them. They sank as lead in the mighty waters. Who is like unto thee, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like thee, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises, doing wonders? Thou stretchest out thy right hand, the earth swallowed them. Thou in thy mercy hast led forth the people which thou hast redeemed. Thou hast guided them in thy strength unto thy holy habitation. The people shall hear and be afraid. Sorrow shall take hold on the inhabitants of Palestine. Then the dukes of Edom shall be amazed. The mighty men of Moab trembling shall take hold upon them. All the inhabitants of Canaan shall melt away. Fear and dread shall fall upon them. By the greatness of thine arm they shall be as still as a stone till thy people pass over, O Lord, till the people pass over which thou hast purchased. Thou shalt bring them in and plant them in the mountain of thine inheritance. In the place, O Lord, which thou hast made for thee to dwell in the sanctuary, O Lord, which thy hands have established, the Lord shall reign forever and ever. And the Israelites left this place of triumph, the shores of the Red Sea, and they traveled 3 days into the wilderness of Shur, and they found no water along the way until they reached the place called Marah. Ample water was found in Marah, but it was not drinkable. The water was bitter, probably poisonous. And the Israelites responded to this with murmuring and complaining against Moses. They demanded to know what they would drink, and Moses cried to the Lord. And God showed Moses a tree which, when thrown into the water, would make the water sweet, drinkable. And there at Marah, God put Israel to the test. He told them, Genesis 15, verse 26, if thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, and wilt do that which is right in his sight, and wilt give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon thee which I brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord that healeth thee. So the Israelites left that place of Marah, and they journeyed to the oasis of Elim. From Elim they journeyed further into the wilderness of Sin, toward Mount Sinai. And 1 month after leaving Egypt, the Israelites looked around the wilderness of Sin and decided they really didn't like it. Food was running low. Water was hard to find. All this walking was just tedious. And they decided that Moses and Aaron had made a horrible mistake in bringing them out of Egypt. And so in Exodus 16, we see them complaining again. In verse 3, "Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full. For ye have brought us forth in this wilderness to kill this assembly with hunger." The Lord responds to them and tells Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or no." So God gave them instructions about this strange bread. He told them this bread would be on the ground every morning except Saturdays. Each morning they were to go out and to gather it for their food each day. Each family was to gather about a half a gallon of it for their needs for that day. They were not to gather anything extra, but only their need for that day, except Saturdays. On Saturdays, the Sabbath day, they were not to gather any manna. In fact, they could not gather manna, for God gave none on the Sabbath. And so instead, on the day before, they were to gather twice as much and to keep some over for the Sabbath day. And so the Israelites went out to gather. And some disobeyed, trying to gather more, gathering a couple days' worth. And yet they found that when they attempt to keep it overnight, it began to rot and to breed worms. Some did not gather extra on Friday, and went out on the Sabbath day to gather and found that there was no bread for them. And so God said to Moses in Exodus 16:27, "How long refuse you to keep my commandments and my laws?" And Israel, all of Israel, called this bread manna and ate of it until they entered the promised land 40 years later. And as they continued their journey through the wilderness, they came to a place known as Rephidim in Exodus chapter 17. There was no water for the people. Again, they came to Moses and they complained angrily at him, against him, demanding water. And Moses asked them, "Why chide ye with me? Wherefore do ye tempt the Lord?" The people continued to murmur against Moses. And so in verse 3 of Exodus 17, it says, "Wherefore is this that thou hast brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our cattle with thirst?" They doubted God's care, wondering, "Is God among us or not?" And Moses cried out to the Lord, I imagine at this time, by this time, very frustrated, asking what to do with the people because they were ready to stone him. And so God told Moses to take his rod in hand and to go up to the rock in Horeb. And Moses was to strike that rock in the sight of all the congregation. God would bring sufficient water from it for all the people to drink. And Moses did as God had said. And God did just as he had promised. Rivers of water poured out of the rock, sufficient for all the needs of over 1 million people. And while they were there, camped there in Rephidim, The people known as the Amalekites decided now would be a good time to attack the Israelites. And so Moses sent Joshua out to choose an army of men to fight against Amalek. So Joshua took a company of untrained slaves and led them out to do battle against the warriors of Amalek. And while they fought, Moses, Aaron, and another man named Hur went up on top of a hill and they watched the progress of the battle. And whenever Moses held up the rod of God in his hand, the Israelites were the stronger. But when he lowered his hand, the Amalekites gained the upper hand. And as Moses continued to hold his arms up, they became very tired. And so Moses and or Aaron and Hur brought up a stone for him to sit on, and they stood on each side of him, holding his arms up until the sun went down. And Joshua and the Israelites defeated the Amalekites by the power of God. And we see in just these few chapters a series of absolutely incredible events. And they show to us once again that God is continually faithful. We have seen this over the last couple weeks. We've seen the faithfulness of God in the face of the enemies of Israel. He remembered His promises to Abraham to bring them out of bondage and to bring them to the land of promise. He remembered the suffering of Israel. He showed His power against the gods of Egypt. He showed that He alone is the true God. And now that Israel has fled, is free from Egypt, God has continued to show Himself faithful. He showed His faithfulness in guiding them into the wilderness. He showed His faithfulness in dividing the Red Sea and overthrowing the armies of Egypt. He showed His faithfulness in giving them and turning the bitter water into drinkable sweet water. He showed His faithfulness in providing food for them when there was none. He showed His faithfulness in giving to them water out of a rock. He showed His faithfulness in giving them the victory over the Amalekites. God is faithful. And I think one of the most remarkable things about this particular section of Exodus is we see God's faithfulness in the face of the Israelites' continued faithlessness. How many times did they complain? How many times did they say, "We should have stayed in Egypt? Why'd you bring us out here to die?" How many times did they accuse Moses of basically just carelessness, and they insisted slavery would have been better than their hunger and their thirst in the wilderness. How often did they disobey God, doubt God, question God? And all of these things took place within 30 days of their leaving Egypt. But we're not even to the 40 years of wandering yet. It's not been a month. They had seen the population of Egypt just decimated, death in every household. They saw the Red Sea cut in half, and they walked between walls of water. And then 3 days later, they say, "You brought us here to die." It's almost funny. It's so sad. They watched the same walls of water collapse on the army of Egypt. They've seen Pharaoh, the one who was so bent on their destruction. They saw him and his army decimated. Or excuse me, not decimated, annihilated. It's gone. Yet they still doubted God. Yet God was faithful. And as we said at the very beginning of this series, one of the things that, really I think the thing that the first five books of the Bible is doing is they are, as it ends in Deuteronomy, they're a witness against Israel. And part of this witness against Israel is the unchanging faithfulness of God in the face of the faithlessness of His people. And yet, lest we feel smug at all as we look back at the Israelites, we ourselves should be grateful that God is always faithful. When you feel the weight of your own sin, remember God is faithful. When you wonder how your needs are going to be provided for, remember God is faithful. When we wonder how the enemy is going to be overcome, God is still faithful. When you wonder how you're going to make it through this difficult stretch in life, remember God is still faithful. And what we see here in this is a vivid display, not only of the power of God, but the continued compassion and faithfulness of God. And we see here great calls to rejoice. I mean, that song of praise in Exodus 15, that is well worth our time to read and to read again and to read again. Praising God for His victory. Remembering His mighty power. But there's a warning here as well. Don't forget the victories that God has won. 3 days later, they're murmuring and complaining again. I mean, and it seems as if they're oblivious. And I'm going to maybe speak a little bit slightly exaggerated here, but to help us think through this. It seems to me as if they're just oblivious. There they have this massive pillar of cloud that everybody in Israel can see. And when things get mad, who do they blame? When things get bad, who do they blame? They run to Moses. It's your fault. We told you this was a bad idea. Why didn't you listen to us? They completely forget God's the one that brought them to the edge of the Red Sea. God's the one that brought them to the place with the bitter water. God's the one that brought them to the place with no water. They've completely forgotten that not only is God the one that brought them there, He's also the one that has provided for them, protected them throughout the whole process. None of this has been Moses' doing. And there's a warning here, and we remember the work that God has done. When things are difficult, you're tempted to murmur and to complain, remember how God has answered prayer and delivered. When you are tempted to doubt and to fear, remember how God has won the victory. Remember the faithfulness of your God. In fact, as we go forward in Israel's history, we have a prime example of this in the life of David. You're probably all familiar with this part of the story when Goliath is there challenging the armies of Israel. David goes to Saul and says, "I'll fight him." And Saul says, "You can't, you're just a kid." David remembers what God has done. David says, I killed a lion and a bear, not by my hand, but by the power of God. And I can go out and kill this Philistine in the same way. We have an incredible example of remembering the working of God. And in fact, you read the Psalms and you see a marvelous, just over and over and over again, marvelous examples of remembering the works of God. And looking back to what God has done so that as you look ahead to what is coming or you look right now at what you're enduring, God remains faithful. The same victory that He has given in the past, He gives again. The same goodness that He has shown in the past, He continues to show. The same purposes of His glory and of your Christ-likeness that He has been operating under, He continues to operate under. God still is accomplishing all of these things. He does not change. We have this great, faithful God. We need to continually remember. But if you'll jump ahead to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Let me give you a couple other applications, a couple other principles here. Paul takes in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, and he references many of these same stories that we've talked about this morning. And he brings in a few other ones as well, but he describes the Israelites' wanderings in the wilderness. And he says in verse 11, all these things happened unto them for examples. And they are written for our admonition. And so as we see these things, we see all of these accounts, we see our God, and we must never lose sight of that, but there's also a harsh reality about ourselves that we need to understand as well. We need to recognize in this that these Israelites are not, well, they're not different from us at all. And so he says, verse 12, wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. One of the applications that Paul gives from these stories of Israel is simple. Be humble. Sin will come upon you. Sin is going to attack you. And you are, well, you're no better off than the Israelites. You have no more personal strength to oppose this sin than they did. Do not be lifted up in pride over your spiritual successes. Remain humble, because ultimately it is God that gave you the victory. And remain humble and watchful. He said, beware. Take heed lest you fall. Keep your eyes open. Lest you be ensnared in the deceits of sin. Lest you fall into the same pitfalls that the Israelites fell into. Be wary. Be careful. Learn from these things. And as well, we see in this, particularly in these accounts, it's a reminder to avoid complaining. I mean, just really that simple. Avoid complaining. The example of the Israelites shows us that murmuring is far more than just expressing an opinion about how things could be done better. It's not just some little minor thing that you can, well, you know, I'm just offering some advice or some helpful constructive criticism. Murmuring, especially when God's direction is clear, is nothing less than accusing God of being ignorant and unreliable. It is nothing less than saying God doesn't know what He's doing. He's not going to take care of me. He's not able to take care of me. It is murmuring is a hallmark of distrust. Avoid it. Trust the wisdom and faithfulness of God. And we also see in verse 13 that our sin is not at all new. He says, there is no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. Our struggles, our desires, our complaints, our failures, our addictions, hang-ups, whatever term you use, our sins are not novel. Ecclesiastes says there's nothing new under the sun. That includes sin. We're tempted to look around at times of our day and say, well, we're worse than we've ever been. No, we're not. We're not coming up with anything new. We're not doing anything that has not been done countless times before. And there is at times there's a certain perverse pride that imagines our particular sin is not like any other, and that we are facing troubles like none have ever known before. What 1 Corinthians 10:13 says is that's not true. Nothing you're facing is new or extraordinary. And that is meant, and it should give us great comfort and hope and help. These words are not meant just to say, well, you're nothing special. These words are meant to say that find comfort and strength. That these words are meant to teach us, because it says, but God is faithful. Haven't we been saying that? God is faithful, even in the face of temptation. God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape that you may be able to bear it. Don't be overwhelmed by your temptation, by your sin, by your circumstance, by your need. The temptation before you is normal. But don't stop there. This is not to excuse sinfulness. The universality of sin does not make it acceptable in some way. Because we all do it means we're all wrong. Not that it's okay. And what he is saying here is we all are tempted, but God remains faithful. And with every temptation, there's a fire escape. Always, that emergency exit is there. We would like it if it came with the big red signs over it and flashing lights when things got dark. But there's always the emergency exit. God always provides a way out. You may have to be like Joseph and leave your coat behind you as you run away. That way out may be painful to your flesh and to your desires. You may have to give up the flesh pots of Egypt. You may have to endure some things that you really would rather not, but there is always a way out. Always. Because God is faithful. And as you look at these things, as you face temptation, remember, God is never going to allow a temptation to come upon you that you cannot escape. I don't know about you, but that is incredibly comforting. No matter how strong the temptation may seem to be, no matter how many times you have yielded to it in the past, God is never going to give you a temptation or allow a temptation to come upon you that you cannot escape. Therefore, flee temptation. In fact, he says in the next verse, flee idolatry specifically. Flee temptation. Run away from all of them and fly to the one who is your strength and your refuge and your safety. Fly to the one who is always faithful. You see, God is doing it in all of these things in Israel. God is doing something remarkable. God is showing His people His power. God is showing them His continued faithfulness. As I mentioned during the song service, God is giving to us, through His people of Israel, some beautiful pictures of Christ. Absolutely incredible pictures of Christ. And God is doing something remarkable in all of these things. And He's bringing His people. He's not just wandering, leaving them through the wilderness just to kill time. He's bringing them to a specific place and a specific time for His good purposes. And so as we look back and we think of the Israelites, we must be reminded, and I'll say it again, we must not look at them as if they are some sort of strange thing way back there and we have no idea how they could act like that. Because I think the genuine reality is if we were in that situation, well, I know if I was, I'd be doing the same thing. In fact, I was studying this and I was thinking, a half gallon of manna every day for 40 years, I would be screaming for meat too. Absolutely. It's human nature. Sinful nature. And so we look at this and we don't look at it and say, boy, I'm glad we're so much better than them. I'm glad we don't act like that anymore. But rather we look at it with humility. We look at it with cautiousness and care. We take warning. We also look at it and we rejoice because no matter how many times we do fail, no matter how often we stumble, no matter how often we complain, no matter how horrible we are at this Christian life thing, God is still faithful. And in the end, it's not up to us. He's done all the work. And He is faithful. And He will bring us certainly to the end that He has accomplished for us. And we can not stop working, not stop striving for holiness, but in our striving we can rest fully in Him. Because He is faithful.